Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio. Welcome, everyone. So nice to have you here with me. As always, a really good show today. Boy, are you going to find out a lot of insight about yourself. Oh, you have no idea. So keep it here. Channel 1, LA Talk Radio. Let me ask you something. Do you think back and feel that you've missed opportunities in relationships because you were afraid of opening up too much to someone? I think we all do that, huh? Don't you? I think we all go through that and do that. Do you even think about incidents in your current relationship and say to yourself, maybe I should have reacted a little differently to certain things, you know? Why did I get so mad at her or him? Or why does my partner lash out to me with such anger? Aren't I justified to get angry too, huh? Or, and this is the biggie I really want you guys to think about. Here's a biggie. Am I in some way pushing that person away on purpose? Why would I do that? Well, intimacy is risky. You know, it requires making a serious commitment to the relationship. Maybe you fear you'll experience a sense of dependency on somebody else. Ooh, I may be too dependent on them. You know, some folks create unhealthy coping mechanisms. We all do, like avoiding intimacy, so we won't get hurt again. We've been hurt too many times. And which is kind of sad, and I think in some way, you know, through our experiences in life, whether we had a great upbringing and a great family, or a not so great upbringing, or we've had some really tough times, you know, growing up as kids in school, teased, bullied, whatever, and or have had really a lot of issues as adolescents trying to figure out who we are. It's difficult for all of us. And sadly for some, the fear of being hurt or abandoned by someone that we develop a close relationship with can really easily be overshadowed with our need to, you know, want to develop a meaningful relationship. It's scary. In other words, it can be scary. Really scary. And sometimes we just have to walk and tread lightly. Sometimes we defend ourselves. Sometimes we just kind of fight and let it all out. A lot of our early frustrations that we never, ever got to express. Never, because we had to be a good kid. We always had to be on good behavior. So there's a lot of things going on in our heads that we project onto our relationships. You guys have heard me talk about this before. So today, we are going to be talking to an enlightened psychologist. This woman is amazing. She's written a new book, and what's so cool about it is it's going to give you a front row seat in her therapy office. What I loved about it is kind of like you're a fly on the wall. You know, how many times have you said, gee, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in that therapy office? You know, well, this is what the book will help you do. And you get to sort of see firsthand and get through the experiences of how a male patient's kind of a push-pull way of relating to my special guest today mirrored his experiences with his wife. Fascinating stuff. So let's pull her up live on the air. And today, by the way, I'm talking with psychologist and psychotherapist, Dr. Jeanette Raymond. She started her career in the UK before setting up her private practice right here in LA. And Dr. Raymond has been called a top relationship expert by Women's Day and always offers tips on her YouTube videos. They're great. And also, she has wonderful blogs to help you connect more comfortably with other people. And she's also a mind-body expert, helping people understand and manage the relationship stresses that makes them literally ill. Stress. Relationships. Yeah, you've heard of the old saying, she broke my heart. Well, it's true. He broke my heart. And she's also the author of her latest book, which we will be talking about today, Now You Want Me, Now You Don't. Fear of Intimacy, 10 Ways to Recognize It and to Manage It in Your Relationship. So let's pull her up live. Hi, Dr. Jeanette Raymond. How are you?
Hello. Wonderful to be with you.
Oh, it's so nice to have you here. I, you know what? When I picked up the book, started reading it last week, I couldn't let it down. It was so compelling, this intense kind of therapeutic relationship inside your office that you have with this man. It's just amazing how you worked with him and did what we call insight-oriented therapy in many ways. You know, it was awesome. Just wanted
to thank you so much. Yeah, you know, and it works on the other end too, as I tried to put in the book, what the effect he was having on me.
Ooh.
So I felt like, you know, I knew what his wife was going through and what he was going through, so I kind of was able to use that to give him the feedback he needed so that he could see what he was unable to see when he was with his wife.
Yes. And you know, Jeanette, it's really important for people to know that, you know, therapists, psychologists, we are people too. So, you know, we have to really think to ourselves, and we learn a lot from people, but we have to think, how is this person affecting me? Last week, we talked about transference, you know,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, so you really are, you know, also informing people about your process and what you went through to, you know, be strong and really help this other individual named Rick. So it was
great.
Yeah,
absolutely, because if we don't feel strong enough to share with our clients how they are affecting us, then we're not doing them any favors because nobody else is going to tell them.
Yes, yes. And again, it, you know, it is a skill that we develop over years of not projecting our own stuff onto them, or counter transference, as we call it. It's difficult sometimes, though. it really is. So, what inspired you to write this book about the fear that we have of intimacy?
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, a lot of complaints from my clients. Male and female, about their partner's coldness, that no matter how hard they try, they couldn't get through, they were feeling invisible, and they were angry and wanting to know, like, you know, what's wrong, and why doesn't it work, and why aren't I good enough, and why don't they see me and relate to me and want me and pull me in closer.
Wow.
What I noticed was that despite their complaints, when I went back over the events, they just said, well, this is what happened yesterday, and I felt rejected and angry, and I went through it with them, you know, with a fine-tooth comb. I said, well, here's something your partner said. Does that really feel like rejection to you? And I helped them to see that they were overlooking the moments where their partners were being inviting, they were being loving, they were being empathic and encouraging and supportive. But in my client's mind, they could only hear the negative stuff because that's what they were used to, and they weren't familiar with recognizing the signs that someone's actually being creative and wanting to be with you. To them, it was not on their radar.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah. The second thing is, I was finding the same thing in my office. So I have a client sitting in front of me, and he's sharing, and this happened only, you know, a couple of days ago, sharing some bad experience, and I was empathizing with him and saying, yeah, you know, I understand this is what happened to you when you were a kid, and you're reliving it, and it feels so wounding, and you just get shut down. Mm-hmm. And he didn't hear any of that.
Wow.
So he was... and I asked him a couple of more, you know, minutes later, because he went on a rant about something. I mm-hmm. said, wonder what you heard from me. And he kind of split me in half.
Wow.
He only heard the part where I was talking about his partner, mm-hmm. maybe trying to get close to him. And he didn't hear the part where I was seeing his point of view.
Isn't that so interesting? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you describe in your book also why that is. But I also want to hear more of your explanation to, you know, what inspired you. What else is going on there?
No, so this is what I'm seeing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
So it made me think that, you know, there must be a lot of people other than my clients who want to be close, they want to feel cared for, they want to feel like somebody's their champion, that they're really, you know, on their side, but they want it in a very particular way, and that means they have to make somebody else the enemy, mm-hmm. that you can't be on my side unless you make my wife the devil. You can't see my point of view unless you close your eyes to hers.
Uh-huh.
So this is what I was finding. I thought, you know, you can't really teach people about relationships if they want you to be blind and blinkered, mm-hmm. because that's the only way they feel cared for. Mm-hmm. And so one of the reasons I wrote this book is to help them see both sides, both Rick's side and Christy's side. Even though Christy didn't come to therapy, mm-hmm. I was doing as much therapy for her through Rick by expressing to him how he perceived his interactions with her could be seen in so many less evil ways than he imagined them to be.
Mm.
And to kind of take the sting out of it for him, because as a child, he had only experienced love in a very negative way. It was either possessive or, you know, he had to be the caretaker, but mm-hmm. nobody ever saw his point of view. Nobody ever saw how hurt he was or how hard he was trying.
Right.
So in my office, as my client, that's what he wants. He doesn't want me to see anybody else's point of view. That means I'm betraying him.
Right.
You know,
yes,
and
yeah,
you can do that for a while when you first come to therapy. You can do it for a year, 2 years, 3 years, but after that, you kind of have to introduce, you know what, there's another point of view,
yes,
and your one is hurting you,
yes, yes.
So
exactly.
Once you kind of fill them up with enough validation, even mm-hmm. though I'm working with somebody now who I've been seeing 7 years, and it's mm-hmm. still not enough.
I understand, believe me. I really do.
So we have to go back and forth.
Yes, we do. We sure do. Great explanation. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest today, Dr. Jeanette Raymond. She's a psychologist, psychotherapist, and author of her latest book, Now You Want Me, Now You Don't. It's The Fear of Intimacy, 10 Ways to Recognize It and 10 Ways to Manage It in Your Relationship. I'm telling you, once you get the book, you will really be compelled, if you're into understanding more about yourself and or your partner, excuse me, you won't want to put it down. It's a great book. So, by the way, if you want to call in here live, if you have questions for Dr. Raymond or myself, you can do so. Number here, 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. Or if you're shy and you don't want to get your voice, you know, on the air, you can email me at docdoc, abbreviated, Doc Michelle with two L's, docmichelle@AOL.com. We have a lot of emails from the past on relationships, and I want to let you all know that we don't have a therapeutic relationship here on the air. We're just giving you suggestions and ideas, okay? So that's just a little heads up, guys. We're just kind of giving you some insight, maybe, that might help you out. All right. Let's get into one of the comments, Dr. Raymond, that I loved that you said. I mean, you just put it right out there. And you said, the commonly held notion that the only thing men want is sex and the only thing women want is affection and talking could not be farther from the truth. So what have you found to be the actual truth about men and women in your couple's work?
Okay, so here goes, because some people might not like it, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Well, it's what you found. It's your truth.
What I found is that men long for softness, tenderness, gentleness, and physical affection from their female partners. Because, you know, when they were little, they probably didn't get a lot from their mothers. You know, the mother said, be strong, be a man, grow up, take care of this and that and the other. Mm-hmm. And so their natural human longing for those kind of things was kind of buried and unmet, and they made it into something dirty and unnecessary. Mm-hmm. So when men grow up and they have romantic relationships and they're in a difficult place and they come into therapy, what I find is that's what they want most of all. They don't want to be seen as the perfect car repairman or the leak fixer or the breadwinner. Or whatever. You know, that's all nice and good. Mm-hmm. And I also find that men use those sorts of things in order to get the reward. And the reward that they want is for their wives or their partners to look at them with their eyes full of softness and tenderness and love and pulling them forward and kind of embracing them as human beings, not as fixer-upper of things or breadwinners or whatever.
Yes.
And that's what they get very angry when their wives, who I see, or girlfriends or partners, whatever, what the wives seem to want is to have a good boy. Do as you're told.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We hear
go
that a lot.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know?
Yes.
Go clean the garage.
Mm.
You've got to phone me and call me back and answer my text when I tell you.
Oh, boy.
You've got to be available to me at all times. Don't lie. Don't cheat. Don't do this. Don't do that. And I'm not saying they're wrong things, but that's where they're coming from. It's they want a good boy. They want to be in control. Because when they were children, they had needs for love and affection and everything else. They probably got a little bit more, but what they didn't get was the feeling of being in control. So they felt controlled as opposed to being controlling. And if they didn't get to be, you know, the apple of their dad's eye, or you know, their mom's go-to person to you know, get things done and so on, they want to feel that sense of control. And when they have a partner, when they finish that initial honeymoon romantic, you know, love in a bubble place, then they get the whip out, and they're very adamant about having their men behave, think, and act in certain ways that prove that they are committed and loyal. So that's my experience.
Well, I agree with you in many cases, and again, a lot of people kind of, and a lot of us, we women, we don't want to hear that, but if we really do think about it, I mean, first of all, they're coming to therapy, the men and women, as a couple as well, but sometimes in your case, in your book, Rick, they're coming to therapy to try to get this all figured out as to why they're being treated like this, so and why they're lashing back in their early environment. But that was a perfect explanation of, you know, why we may do the things we do growing up, because we, you know, and women, again, the control, we weren't in control, so we're all adults here, and now we have partners, and we need to get that control. We need to... You need to be a good boy, you know?
Well, the other part of it is, if the little girl, when she was growing up, if she wasn't daddy's little princess, and daddy was more involved with his wife or his work, as in the case of Christy in the book, then even more, when the woman has an adult romantic relationship, she wants to rein in that man. You've got to look at me. I should be your focus, not anybody else, because she was in competition as a child with her dad's focus on either his wife, or in Rick's case, mistress, or with his work, in both their cases.
Wow, that is so
the,
true.
The woman really wants to get this rein and rein him in. Mm-hmm. I'm the one. It's kind of a sense of entitlement for the woman that I didn't get it, and now I've got you. I'm going to make you give it to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, exactly.
You take the place of my dad now, and you've got to give me everything that my dad didn't give me that I was entitled to. And the same for the man. He says, I didn't get the love and affection. I didn't get the softness and gentleness. Mm-hmm. I didn't get all the pampering and just to be loved for who I am, not because I'm a male and I'm supposed to play all these male roles.
Wow.
So he's coming from a place of entitlement, and I want it from you. And look how much I'm doing for you, and you're still not giving it to me. And the wife says the same thing. Look how much I'm doing for you, and you're still not giving me what I want.
Yes. It's like a battle. It's a push and a pull, you know, as you describe
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah.
By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest today, Dr. Jeanette Raymond. She's a psychologist, psychotherapist, and author of her latest book, Now You Want Me, Now You Don't. It's The Fear of Intimacy. And I really advise you guys, if you are having issues in your relationship, this will help clarify a lot of things. It's both for men and women, because Dr. Raymond has a client named Rick who is in her office, and we're sort of like, we get to peek and get a front seat of these intense therapy sessions, and she's helping him out, giving him insight, but also she's talking about his wife, Christy, and how she, you know, helping him understand her and the motivations behind her needs and her fears as well. So we'll talk about how you can get Dr. Raymond's book in just a little bit as well. But I also encourage you to call in if you have any questions or if you'd like to email me. I do have some emails coming in right now from listeners who are a little shy about calling 323-203-0815. But we'll get to those in a little bit because I want to cover more about your book, Dr. Raymond. So, and I know a lot of people aren't going to want to hear this one either. So get ready, guys. In your experience, Jeanette, working with individuals and couples, why do many men cheat?
Well, I'm going to take issue with that. I don't believe many men cheat.
Okay.
I think some men cheat and some women cheat because
okay.
I've had both ends of the spectrum.
Okay.
In fact, you know, in my own life, as I say in the book, it was my mother who cheated, not my father.
Yes. Good heavens.
Right.
Yes.
And that's true. That's an actual fact, okay?
Yeah, sure.
So it's not just men, but when they do, my sense is they have tried desperately hard to get through to their female partners that they want the softness, gentleness, the love, the kind of, you know, that light in your eyes, accept me for who I am and what I am, not what I do or what I can bring you.
Yeah.
And somehow they do it wrong, they don't get it across, or they come across as babies, that's what I hear. So the women don't want to know, and they say, well, just grow up and don't be so responsible and go do your thing, you know, just be a good boy.
Yes.
So what the men do is that need doesn't go away. They didn't get it as kids from their mothers, and they know that there are women out there who can give it. And if they find someone who looks like they're interested, you know, if a man has a mistress, when they're together, they get 100% of their attention, and they get seen as human beings, because that man's not necessarily bringing them, you know, money or, you know, doing jobs for them or whatever, you know. So they get that basic human need met for somebody to just be focused on you and let the world out there go to hell.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Just you and me. And it's the most potent aphrodisiac there is. There isn't one greater than that. And that includes sex.
Yep.
For someone to want you just for you in that moment for as long as you want to be there, because he can walk out at any time. And what he's really trying to do is get his wife jealous and anxious about the relationship. So she'll want to do something about it. But the sad part about it is what the women do is they try to be more sexy and attractive and lose weight and buy new, you know, lingerie and all that. But it's not about that.
Yeah.
It's about being seen as a human being underneath. Not all the men I know, without fail, tell me, I don't like makeup. I don't like jewelry. I don't like all that stuff. I just want the real person. Wives go about it the wrong way. They try to seduce them, and it's not sex that they want.
Yeah.
It's the connection as two human beings. Sex is nice, but it doesn't touch that spot where you want to be seen just as you and loved for who you are, whether you're rich or poor, ugly or not, you know, handyman or idiot.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to be loved for yourself, like a little child would be. And they got missed out on all that as kids.
Yes, they sure did. Something, speaking about sex, and I just wanted to throw this out there, is in your book you talk about Rick's wife, Christy, and how, you know, she was able to have this, not necessarily passionate, but she could have a lot of sex and just jump into it and go for it, and she was really into that. But that was sort of, this is the problem sometimes that we don't understand as women, is, oh, they'll be satisfied if I just go for it and, you know, enjoy the sex. And that's not, I mean, yes, it's wonderful and great and fun, but it wasn't the connection that he needed. She was
He felt like a stud because he had to perform in bed to please her physically. And it didn't really matter whether it was a man, it was a pillow she used, or any other, you know, thing to help her have the kind of pleasure that she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, he didn't feel wanted as a human being. And then immediately was all, you know, they say this about men, that as soon as the sex is over, they roll over. Women do the same thing. It's not a gender issue.
Mm-hmm.
And both parties also want to feel like they're wanted for themselves. But women who fear emotional intimacy use sex because it's time limited.
Sure.
They don't have to give anything away of themselves. They don't want to. They don't have to pretend that they feel something that they don't. And the most important thing is they don't have to take care of the man's feelings.
Right.
That's what they don't want to do, because when they were children, little girls had to take care of everybody else's feelings, especially daddy's.
Oh, boy.
Because they wanted to be daddy's little girl, so you have to take care of his feelings.
Oh, that's heavy.
And that's what happened to Christy in my book.
Yes.
She had a dad who blew hot and cold, so one minute he wanted her, the next minute he didn't. She didn't know how to take care of his feelings so that she'd be on his radar.
Mm-hmm.
And now she doesn't want to have to do the same thing with Rick.
Yes.
You know? So she says, just love me for what actions I do for you, the food that I make, the way that I run the house, the way I take care of the kids, you know, the extra jobs that I have to bring in the money. But don't want anything else from me because I can't handle it.
Wow. That is amazing. And it really is, if you look at it, the insight is there. It's really true. So it's a fascinating story. And it was easy, like you said, it was easy for Christy to go for the sex and just really not have, say, a deep, warm, loving sexual experience because she feared intimacy. So this was a great deterrence for her to have to be really emotionally intimate with him.
And she kind of got herself, that thought of herself off as a very young child, because she learned that if she didn't wrap herself up in a cocoon, then her mother could play hell with her inside by putting her on an emotional roller coaster.
Mm.
Her dad could blow hot and cold. So instead of being vulnerable, she cocooned herself.
Sure.
But she found physical pleasure as a substitute.
Yeah.
And I mean sexual pleasure.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Sure.
And so in her teenage time, you know, she tried to take care of people by being a good cook and doing all these wonderful things, and that didn't satisfy her. So then she used sex, and she did what usually men are accused of, using men for sex.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and
she did that successfully, and it protected her from feeling hurt or used or betrayed or rejected. And the most important thing was she was in control.
Wow.
That's entirely up to her.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it happens. I see it a lot in my practice as well. Dr. Raymond, you know, the same thing. You know, out there in the popular world in media, and it's always sort of, you know, the man's the one who's the one that's, you know, not being warm and fuzzy and close. But they're not allowed to speak up about the intimacy that they need and the emotional closeness, like you said, because we're taught in this society, be a man, you know, hide those feelings, grow up, you know, swallow it down and don't say a word, you know. Let's just briefly just talk, and I don't want to spoil the book at all, but about the dynamics between Christy and Rick in terms of how their seemingly ideal marriage became torture. Because I know you have heard, as have I, in couples therapy, yeah, we were in love. It was fun. We had great times together, and it was romantic. And then it's developed into this, contest. So what went wrong?
Well, nothing went wrong. It's just that when they were first dating and had their, initial romance before they decided to settle down with one another, they were seeing little tiny pieces of each other, not the whole person. So in Rick's case, he was seeing this woman who seemed to be excited by him. Wow, what a thing for him. His mother wasn't excited by him, and nobody was excited by him as a kid. He was just there to take care of everybody else. So here's this woman who thinks he's good-looking, and he's exciting, and he knows about this and that, and he wants to spend time with me.
Yeah.
So from Christy's point of view, nobody wanted to spend time with her. Mm-hmm. All the focus was on her mother or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
So from Christy's point of view, somebody's actually focusing on her and putting everything else aside. Somebody's wanting to share their moments with her and not saying that, basically the two of them did not have to compete with anyone else for each other's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And in their childhoods, both of them were in fierce competition with other members of their family for the attention, in Rick's case, of his mother,
mm-hmm.
and in Christy's case, of her dad.
Mm.
Now, in their romantic liaison, when they're dating, there is no competition.
Right.
And Christy's not pushed to have sex, so that part of her can kind of lie down and go to sleep for a while. Then this other part of her can bloom, the one that she had put in a cocoon for so long.
Mm.
She can finally let it out a little bit and enjoy it, but it's controlled. They stop it at a certain time of day, they don't go for the sex, they don't kind of do it all in one go.
Mm-hmm.
So she's still in control, and that's important for her.
Yes, exactly.
And Rick's side, he's getting such a good feeling that somebody wants him for who he is, not just for what he can do, because he was taking care of his mother and his sister and trying to protect them from his, unfaithful dad.
Yeah.
For him, most importantly, in the book I talk about, he had a relationship with a woman before he met Christy.
Yes.
Whereas Christy didn't actually have any relationships.
Right.
And this woman seemed to be perfect. They had the same caring backgrounds. They kind of came together organically and lived together and so on.
Yeah.
But it was boring because she was so perfect and ideal. It was so damn boring.
Right.
So there was nothing for him to get. So with Christy, it wasn't boring because it was all new and fresh, and he didn't have to take care of her. She was independent.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to worry about losses and being a certain way or whatever, because they were just seeing the parts of each other that had been buried for so long.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't seeing all the other hurt and the wounds and the need for control and the need to have a battle and all those other things that came up for them after they got married.
Boy, and that's true. You just don't see it. That concept of the girlfriend before Christy was boring. How many times have you heard that, Jeanette, in your practice? I was just bored. I didn't have to. And there is really something to that. Sort of what I say, being addicted to drama from our early lives. We want to reignite. Those are the relationships that may not be the healthiest for us because that person is dramatic and angry. But boy, it's setting off some of those old fuses in our brains, which say, this reminds me of the olden days when I had to get my adrenaline up and defend myself. And this was how my crazy home was. Yeah, I like this. Not on a conscious level. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of like if it's there for the asking, it doesn't feel satisfying because the person gets a high from making it happen. Mm-hmm. So for Rick, if he could make Christy almost on the verge of forcing her to do his will, then it's satisfying because then he feels like he did it. So it must be real and genuine. Mm-hmm. If it's just there, if it's offered to you on a plate and you don't have to fight for it or work hard at it, then it's kind of, you know, it's not so valuable.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Something that I really got hooked into while reading your book was some of the suggestions that you gave to Rick for beginning his journey towards becoming more emotionally intimate with his wife, Christy. So can you share some of those suggestions that you gave him? And I think listeners will really say, wait a minute, whoa. Wow, that's what I'm doing too. You know?
Right. Well, I think the first suggestion I gave him was, you know, to do things with Christy in the house, housework, you know, little things together. Instead of dividing labor, you know, do things with her so that she wouldn't feel scared that he was going to want her to take care of his feelings, that he was going to be a big baby or whatever. He was actually taking care of responsibilities with her. And so then her guard might be a little down, and they could start to, you know what, I remember when my mother used to do laundry, or I remember when my dad used to come home and he used to buy this bread that we all liked, and then we'd make sandwiches and all that. So they begin to share little moments of their history that they probably never had before. And in that way, they actually create an intimate moment that's uniquely theirs, that they can kind of put in piggy bank, and when things are a bit rough, they can go back and say, yeah, we did have that nice moment. Why am I feeling so empty? Why do I think there's nothing there? We did have that moment.
Wow.
What I find with my clients is they don't register those tiny little moments, and they think there's nothing there.
Right. It's
you
so
know, they
true.
Just don't
exactly.
register it.
No, exactly.
And then, yeah, so one of the other suggestions I gave him, you know, when he's feeling like there's nothing there and all his hard work has been in vain, so why should he keep trying? I said, use this mental image. Think of a rope between the two of you, and I call it this rope of connection.
Yes.
She's holding one end, you're holding the other end. Sometimes it'll be very taut and tight, and you feel very connected and together, and there's not even a hair separating you. You're on the same page, totally in sync, great, wonderful, you know, ecstatic. But there'll be other times when that rope is a little less taut. It's a bit slack on her end.
Yes.
And he's saying, oh my God, I'm anxious. Does she not want me anymore? Is she rejecting me? Is she letting me go? What do I need to do? How do I get back in that place? And what I tell people, and Rick in the book, is don't forget that she's still holding on to it. It's just that it feels loose to you. It's still there. It's still there. And I said, there are times when you might want to loosen it because you're overwhelmed or you feel full up with your own emotions or your own experience at the moment, and you just don't have any room for anything else.
Yes.
So you might let go of the rope a little bit.
Wow.
The
rope
is still there. It's just how loose or tight it is, depending on how full or empty you feel.
Yes, exactly. It makes so much sense. Jeanette.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense. Yes. I love that technique.
People think, you know, that it's when they grew up, it was everything was all or nothing. They were either wanted or they weren't wanted. They were either beautiful or they were ugly. They were either good boys or bad boys. So it's hard when they grow up to think that their partner mustn't be permanently available. They must have all the room in the world to have them there and accept them and want them no matter what, no matter what else is going on, even though intellectually they get the idea because they're having their own experience.
Of,
you know, when you have a lot on your plate, you really can't attend to everything. So it's natural, but it doesn't mean that they don't want you.
Wow.
Or that you suddenly become a bad guy in their eyes.
Yes.
And this is a very difficult concept for people who don't get it emotionally, because they imagine that if somebody really wanted you, and I have lots of clients who are telling me this right now, that it's an all or nothing. They either want me all the time or they don't.
Wow.
If they can't want me at 6 a.m. and not want me at 6 p.m.
Yes, yes. That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, but what they don't get is wanting has every shade of gray you can imagine. Sometimes they want you a lot, and
yes,
you don't want them.
That's right.
Because it's suffocating. Yes. And sometimes they only want a little bit of you, and they can't cope with any more. But it doesn't mean that they don't want you.
Yes.
So I've tried to give them the image of a stomach, you know, when you're full.
Right.
Even though you love pizza, you don't want it that much.
No. No.
When you're starving and you are given a bowl of soup that you hate, you want it.
That's right. That makes so much sense. Exactly. Think about that, guys, out there. And by the way, if you'd like to email Dr. Jeanette Raymond, my special guest today, here on the air live, and me, about her book, Now You Want Me, Now You Don't. It's about the fear of intimacy. You can do so, Doc Michelle at AOL.com, D-O-C, Michelle with two L's at AOL.com. And I do have more questions that I want to ask you about your book, Dr. Raymond, but we have a listener who has emailed us, and he's frantic, it's seemingly, and I don't think we can actually really go into the depth of helping him, but I want to encourage him to pick up your book. But shall I just read this quickly?
Oh, sure.
This is so pertinent to what we're talking about. And it's obvious that he wrote this very quickly. But I'm going to call him John because I don't want to reveal his name. He says, my wife is always ignoring me, always on the phone, is not intimate with me. If I want to kiss her, she moves away. She never involves me when she goes out with friends from work. And she makes excuses when I ask her to be with me. She makes excuses when I want her to be, I can't really read this, out in public. I feel lonely, always ignored. I still remain truthful and honest to her, and I've never cheated on her due to my two kids and her adopted sisters. Their moms have passed away. What can I do? I feel depressed every day, angry and lost. I don't know what to do. Please help me, please. Wow. I'm so sorry, John.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
You can hear how desperate
yes.
this person is and
yes.
how hard he's been trying to be a good boy.
Yes, yes, he has.
I'm so glad this came up because, you know, one of the things I say in the book is that Rick tried to be a good boy all his life from the tiniest infant to, you know, his most grown-up, mature self.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all done that, I think, at some point in our lives because we think that if we're good and loyal and consistent
mm-hmm.
and we never, you know, do anything to upset the other person, at least not intentionally,
yes.
then we should be rewarded by their attention.
Right.
They should want to embrace us and make us, you know, their number one and put us on a pedestal
right.
and never live a moment without us.
Yes,
but
yes.
this is a fallacy.
It is.
Because good people, in my experience, kind of fade into the background.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we do.
So you're just a part of the thing. I know you're going to be good, so why should I bother you? There's no excitement. There's no drama. There's no, and I don't mean drama in a bad way. I mean,
right.
you know, that
right.
that thing that makes your heart flutter, that
yes.
makes you want to kind of approach something,
mm-hmm.
and it's not attractive. So goodness is not attractive.
Mm.
And that's the, I hear the same painful echo from so many of my clients.
Mm.
Look at all the things I did. Look how good I was. Look how patient I was. Look how I was. Standing I was. Look how much I tolerated, and still I get ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because you're not being a person.
Yes.
You're not sharing your anger,
yes.
your resentment, your entitlement to have an equal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Your needs are being sidelined because you are sidelining them by not speaking up.
Yes.
And that's one of the other things I tell Rick. How is Christy going to know what your needs are if you don't tell her?
Exactly.
If you don't value them and speak up, she's not going to value them and speak up.
Right.
And this is what happened to him as a child. He was sacrificial. He did everything he could to please his mother, his sister, and everybody else
mm-hmm.
because he wanted to be seen as a good boy, because then he thought, oh, then I'll be valued and then I'll be wanted.
Yes.
And then everybody else will be pushed out of the way and they'll be me.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't happen that way.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, the opposite, because mm-hmm. you just get seen as a doormat.
Yep. And then you internalize it. He shoved it down, and boy, he had a lot of rage that he transferred onto you, didn't he? He
right.
had a lot of anger. You became
right.
you became
I'm sure
mom.
Our listener doesn't yeah. seem to want to take some power and
yes.
empower himself.
Yes.
Because he's giving all the control to his wife. She's not doing this, she's not doing that, she's not doing the other. Yes.
Yes.
But you need to do things as well mm-hmm. to make it an equal relationship. You need to be more open about what it is you want and why you want it mm-hmm. and make her realize that she's as important to you as you are to her. Right
yes.
now you're saying, I'm a doormat, and could you please not treat me so badly? Well, why
yes.
should she?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're taking it.
Yes.
And you're saying that it's my goodness, my martyrdom, my self-sacrifice that should make you treat me nicely.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I wish it was like that, but life doesn't work that way.
Yes.
You have to actually be... step up to the plate and participate in the relationship. This is another thing that so many of my clients don't seem to appreciate,
yes.
that they need to be participants.
Yes, yes.
It's not going to just come to them if
yes.
they sit there and be martyred.
Yes, yes. And we, you and I both would suggest to this, as you, well, Rick did come in and see you, but this, we're calling him John, who emailed us about his situation.
Mm-hmm.
Go, please, please, go online and find a therapist. PsychologyToday.com is a wonderful resource. I don't know what city you're in. Doesn't say here, but I would really invite you to go on that particular website and find a specialist who can help you, you know, with relationship issues or your own personal issues, because it's easy to say, but I mean, there are a lot of folks out there who are willing, if you don't have insurance, to do fee for service, which is a more inexpensive way of getting the help you need. But you also might want to pick up this book, and I'm not trying to be a salesperson, but I'm telling you, it's a very helpful book. It's called Now You Want Me, Now You Don't, John, Fear of Intimacy. It's by my guest on the air today, Dr. Jeanette Raymond. It's a really good read, and you'll learn a lot about yourself and, how to be more assertive and tell your wife what you need and start changing a little bit. So... I hope we helped you, John, and thank you, Jeanette, for helping him as well. It was a lot of insight, and it's not done in a 5-minute conversation over the radio, but give you some ideas, John, on how to get some help. We talked about what sort of causes us to be lack intimacy rather sometimes. But you do give some wonderful suggestions along with being more assertive, learning how to express yourself, learning how to talk, get the needs you want met that are loving, intimate, helping out at the house, showing someone, and looking in their eyes and having these discussions. How can we sort of... see some of those avoidance tactics? You talk about those avoidance tactics, those little stages or little steps or little things that are avoidance tactics that we use so we don't have to be intimate.
Right.
What are some of those things that we should look out for?
Well, the one that's the most common is when people are always busy. It's kind of like the listener who emailed you said, my wife's on the phone and,
yeah.
She's always doing things and say, not now, and so on. So that's the first thing, when people are always busy, because what they're really telling you is, I'm full up, don't come anywhere near me, and look how good I am because I'm doing all these things for you. That's the best way of getting you to back off, because it's
wow.
that I'm doing it for you.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing it for selfish reasons.
Wow.
Right?
Yep.
So that's one.
Then yep.
Another one is when you're trying to have a conversation with them and they change the subject. They deflect whatever it is you're sharing with them about yourself mm-hmm. or about your experience or the question that you're kind of putting to them, and they deflect and go somewhere else. So it's like they're saying, I don't want to connect with you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go up to some past event or some intellectual place or somewhere where we don't have to have our emotions mixing with one another.
Yep.
Yep. Another one.
That makes sense. Yep.
Okay. A third one that I think we can all identifies with is you're talking to someone, or they're talking to you, mm-hmm. and they just go on and on and on, and mm-hmm. they don't give you a chance to respond.
Mm. Yeah. Yep.
And we all know what that's like. We roll our eyes and we sigh and we try to get in, but we can't.
Yes.
Well, the reason they're doing that is because they didn't let you in.
Yes.
You might actually connect with them. You might actually see that they have a feeling.
Wow.
Or you might want to touch a part of them that they don't want you to touch.
Wow.
So if they can blast you with a ton of talk,
yes,
you're going to back off, you're going to feel sleepy, you're going to feel bored, you're going to want to say, oh my God, when's this ever going to end? So you actually move away from them, which just serves that purpose.
Yes. Wow, those are great tips. Great ideas to think about. A lot of insight in your book. We do have a break coming up here with CBS News. So I want to tell listeners the best way to get a hold of your book and find out more information about you and your practice here in Los Angeles, Dr. Raymond. So what is the best way to find you?
Well, I have a website, which is losangeleswestsidetherapy.com.
Okay. Great.
Okay. And my phone number and other contact information is on there. There's also a website for the book, which is the same name as the book, Now You Want Me, Now You Don't.
.com. Great. Okay.
And those are the two best ways. You know, all my contact information is there, including email, phone, everything else. And as you mentioned so kindly before, Michelle, mm-hmm. there are, you know, about 46 YouTube videos that will give you more tips on things, and, you know, that's another way of connecting with me. Mm-hmm. And I also have on all my websites, you can sign up for a weekly newsletter, which is my blogs and videos and book excerpts and things like that, and it's free.
Great.
And you can sign up for that.
Great, and all this information will be up in the archives for you guys to check out, and of course, if you missed any part of the interview today, you can replay, download it. Dr. Jeanette Raymond, thank you so much for coming on the show today. What a great, great subject, and your book is amazing. I just really enjoyed reading it, and I thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Michelle. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I enjoyed speaking to you. You do a great job in all the different things that you do and make this available to your listeners, so thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. And we'll be looking forward to your next book. There you go.
Okay.
Right. Take good care, Dr. Raymond. Bye-bye now. All right, folks, we got to get out of here. It's time. It's time. How time flies when you're having fun. As I always say, do take care of yourself first, and then you will be great for others. You got to get to know what's going on inside of you to be a good partner, as Jeanette was talking about as well. We'll be back next week. We have Roy Nelson on the phone. Oh, my gosh. Another relationship expert. And we're going to talk about how to get yourself together and just be a better person in general. Not for others, for yourself to feel happier. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen. You can stay on the couch if you like. Bye-bye.